Lady Weem asks, "Welcome, sweet Perth, you're to my soul most dear. Say, where is the prince, that dismal tale I'll hear? But why do I speak, your grace? I'd rather hear." The Duke of Perth answers, "Madam, since you command, I'll willingly obey. I'll tell the dismal story of the day when our brave clan so fast did fall by the destroying cannonball. The prince for them into high heavens implored, 'Have mercy on their souls, good Lord!' His angel's voice their dying souls charmed. Life stayed a while, till this the prince they warned, 'Fly, gracious prince, of thy fierce foes beware. Save, save thy life. Thy life is our greatest care. Let peace and joy in the bright bosom shine. If not on earth, in heaven you'll ever reign. To die for thee is a most glorious death. Therefore with pleasure we'll resign our breath, where our distressed souls shall upward fly, and soon shall join their kindred in the sky, when all our sorrows will be ever over. Death will distract, nor pains oppress no more."
So that was an excerpt from a poem titled After the Defeat at Culloden, and in this episode we'll be talking more about poems, poetry, clan stories and the legacy of Jacobites. So Nicola, would you like to tell us a little bit more about that poem?
Well, I've taken to calling it the epic poem. That's only a tiny bit of it. It's quite large. It's in the exhibition. People can come and see it, the actual written poem. It was purchased back in 2016 by ourselves through a grant which we got from the National Fund for Acquisitions. And we've been publishing it in sections in our Friends of the Archive newsletter. And it's also been used in a couple of exhibitions now and also as the subject of a presentation.
Okay, so in terms of presentations, is that people coming to you, you going out or speaking to groups or in the library? How does that work?
Well, I'm actually part of the archive and local and family history team, and I work with our assistant archivist, Sarah Wilcock. And we worked up a presentation based on the poem. We regularly go out and give talks to interested groups, historical societies, we have school groups, and we have these groups, they visit us in the AK Bell Library. But usually we talk about what we do, how people can access things, and what interesting things we look after in our collections: newspapers, maps, images, documents, books, etc. So we were quite excited about acquiring the poem at this time, and we wanted to do something to use it, and as I say, it's on display as part of the Jacobite clan, so people can go along now and see it for themselves. But we recited, we worked up a presentation and recited parts of it in the presentation, and we looked at the poem itself, the subjects of it, and other Jacobite heroines, other women such as Lady Grange and Lady Panmure, they're Jacobite women from the period, and we added some songs as well to the poem.
So this is part of the legacy part of the exhibition. What comes on after that?
Yeah, the Jacobites living on in song and verse is all about the legacy of that, and we'll have a couple of podcasts about that, I know. The manuscript for this is a poem in three parts. The first part, Folio 1, has about 39 lines written as a fictionalised conversation between Lady Weem and the Duke of Perth. And she's asking for a description of the Battle of Culloden. That's a wee bit that I've just read there just now. Lady Weem asks and the Duke of Perth answers. Folio 2 is 7 lines written as a fictionalised reply from Lady Weem, and Folio 3 is another 32 lines written as a conversation between a Major Lockhart and the Duke of Cumberland. The final 10 lines are written from Charles Edward Stuart's perspective following the brutal defeat of the Jacobite forces at Culloden. So why do we start at the end? Well, we're right at the end of the time frame again with Culloden, from Killiecrankie right through to Culloden. Of course, that's what we cover in our exhibition. And the main question for us was, who's Lady Weem? She must have been someone important at the time for the author to single her out as the only female character in the poem. And while she has a very small part in the poem, her role is quite significant, as she represents the hundreds, if not thousands, of women who were at home, left at home waiting for news of what would be Bonnie Prince Charlie's last stand. And so our question, who was Lady Weem? This is great for me, as it ties in with other research I've done on Jacobite noblewomen. So finding another one to explore has been a great part of the process of getting the poem.
So do you know who she was, or have you uncovered any information about her?
Well, Sarah did a lot of work on this actually as well, and we couldn't find a huge amount, but Lady Weem was the title given to Lady Mary Mingus, wife of Chief Sir Robert Mingus of Mingus, the third baronet, very grand. Born in 1713, she was the eldest daughter of James, the second Earl of Bute, and Lady Anne Campbell, the daughter of Archibald Campbell, first Duke of Argyll. So she's from quite major stock, if you like. Through her father, Mary could trace her lineage back to Robert, King of Scots, Robert the Bruce, who founded the Stuart line. So the Bute branch comes through Robert's son, John Stuart, and his mistress, Moira Leach, who was appointed Sheriff of Bute and Arran around 1385. So she's taking her family lineage all the way back, and that's what the big noble families can do. You have to prove who you are. So Lady Mary Mingus, Lady Weem, was the sister to John Stuart, the third Earl of Bute, and he was the first Lord of the Treasury. And James Stuart Mackenzie was another brother who became the Lord Privy Seal of Scotland. So she's got these brothers and this great lineage through her father and her mother. She died. We know she died in 1773, leaving behind one daughter, Christian Mingus. Now, they're another family that have a big family history volume here in the Achy Bell. I'm talking about those big books following the big history. So it's the Red and White Book of Mingus. Lady Mary set the standard. The description there is that Lady Mary set the standard for Highland hospitality to Charles Edward Stuart when Bonnie and Prince Charlie arrived. She's one of these women that entertains them. So it reads, and I'll just read a wee bit from the book. Lady Mingus was particularly attentive to the prince. She always set dinner for him and his officers in the most approved style. The household of the prince consisted of about 70 persons. There were always 10 covers set upon the prince's own table and 8 upon tables for his others in the old banqueting hall at Castle Mingus, where the whole party dined in state. The hospitality of Lady Mingus to the prince was an example to other Highland ladies who vied with each other to do the same. That's the quote there, so I quite like that. And that really, I mean, her family history there, who her parents are, who her brothers are, and her daughter, and that's really all we know about Lady Mary Mingus. None of her personal letters and correspondence appears to have survived. Her own thoughts on Charlie and the Jacobite risings are not known.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame that all we really have now is just a few lines in a book and just a little bit of information that she knew how to host like a nice dinner party.
Pretty much. What's curious to consider is whether she was truly a Jacobite at all. It's really difficult to tell what choices women made when the accounts might not survive. We don't have anything from them. And all we have are these kind of smaller anecdotes. Nothing survives to tell us what Mary thought of all that was happening around her. And it's been one of my big challenges when looking at Jacobite women to see past that kind of anecdote or the heroic act and try, if we can, to find out more about a whole life and not just one little event. So you see on the back of that one report, we might think that Lady Weem was a committed Jacobite, ready to do all kinds of things to support the cause. But do we really know that at all?
So what can you do when you don't really have any information to go on?
Well, that's the great skill in doing family history. And people, you know, are far better genealogists than I am. Some of my team are very good at this kind of work. And one of the secrets I've learned from the people I work with is to look at the people around a person. And if you don't have an awful lot to go on for that person, often filling in the details and the bigger picture can give you clues. So it's the men surrounding her that we were looking at, really, in order to sort of get an idea of her own feelings. And could it be that her actions were dictated by the men, you know, actually driven by what people are doing? So her father's James Stuart, the second Earl of Bute, and he'd been appointed commissioner for trade in Scotland, as well as was a lord of the bedchamber. Now, during the 15 uprising, he'd commanded the Bute and Argyll militia and had kept the peace in that area. So he supported the Hanoverian, the government side. An even stronger supporter of King George was her brother, John Stuart, the third Earl of Bute. He was a tutor to Prince George. So upon the prince's rise to the throne, he was created a privy councillor and first lord of the treasury. The other brother, James Stuart Mackenzie, was also a privy councillor, an MP and Lord Privy Seal of Scotland. So he certainly wasn't flying the flag for Charlie. So this, you know, points to the fact that they're all government and you know, they're not Jacobites. So despite all of these strong ties to the monarchy, she marries a Jacobite, Chief Sir Robert Mingus of Mingus, the third Baronet.
So this is this old insurance policy that keeps kind of cropping up. And do you think this is maybe a case of keeping a foot in both camps?
Well, it could be. We see that in all families, don't we, that we've described. But as the wife of a Jacobite, she probably would be expected to support her husband's cause, regardless of her father and her brother's views and stance. So when Charles Edward Stuart appeared on her doorstep, there was very little she could do but welcome him in and show him every courtesy and support of her husband. It could be argued that the level of her attention towards the prince was probably a good sign that she had an affinity towards him. And perhaps we do her a bit of an injustice to suggest that maybe the men around her determined her actions, because that's not the case for other women and her mindset rather than her own. But as nothing of her survives, it's really difficult to get to the truth of, or you know, even to understand her feelings. So we can only really speculate through the actions of those surrounding her. She did suffer the consequences of this allegiance through her husband, of course. While Robert was in support of Charlie's campaign, he's reported as being lame and unfit for action and active service. And so he deputised a chieftain, John Mingus of Sheehan, and Glenquaich, I think it's Glenquaich, to lead the Mingus forces. And this meant that he was still in residence when Cumberland's troops arrived at Castle Mingus in Charlie's wake. Lady Wem and Sir Robert were removed from Castle Mingus. This is after Bonnie Prince Charlie's been through, they've entertained him. And then as all the men move on, Cumberland arrives. This is the government army arriving, so they're not going to be nearly as pleasant. So Lady Wem and Sir Robert are removed from Castle Mingus by Cumberland's troops and sent to stay in one of the estate houses that was pretty much unfit for habitation. Much of their furniture and possessions were damaged or destroyed by the government forces, and up to an estimated total of around £6,000. But the estate was not forfeit despite their Jacobite sympathies. Had the property and title been lost, it's unlikely that they would have found aid from her family, who again would not wish to be closely associated with traitors to their king, daughter or not.
So Castle Mingus, what's left of it now?
Well, it's a wonderful castle, and we're so glad to have worked with them as our partners in this as well, because we visited there and it's another place on our kind of map, and people can go and see Castle Mingus, but it's lovely. It's just beyond Aberfeldy, Wem, just near Wem, and it's open to the public and has a walled garden. They hold events there and all sorts. It was rescued as a ruin in 1957. It had fallen into disrepair. I think a great deal of the estate and all sorts of things were sold off at one point. Mingus used to have a huge land ownership and estate, but it was sold off in the early 1900s. So it was fallen into disrepair, and a great deal, as I say, was lost. But the Clan Mingus Society restored it and they continue to work on it. It's architecturally quite fascinating, I believe. It has a different kind of footprint and you can look at all the ways that that's been built upon. And they've a lot of information on site and there are publications too. It's a working venue too, to obviously keep it going. They do events and all kinds of things there. So the history is being preserved by the clan to this day. And there is a gorgeous walled garden which you can see from the castle across there, and there's lots of lovely planting there. Some of our great plant hunters, Archibald Mingus, came from the Aberfeldy area. He was somebody that brought back some of the great trees and plants. So they're actually, he was known as the monkey puzzle man. He discovered the monkey puzzle and brought it back to his country along with lots of other plants, and that's one of the things they have in the walled garden. So it's a wee aside to the story, but he's still a Mingus. So in the grand scheme of things, the Minguses at the time of the 45 were pretty lucky. Because Robert had not actively participated in the rebellion, they were restored to their home and were later awarded some compensation for the damage to their property and possessions. And nor did Lady Wem lose the company or the friendship of her family, because we have evidence in a letter written to her from Lady Jane Douglas. Lady Jane states that it gives her great pleasure to think how happy my dear Lady Mary has been these past few months in the company of her brother, and such a brother as Mr. Mackenzie. So that's obviously a link there in another life, in other letters, I should say. Lady Wem is a woman whose life remains mostly hidden from us, and we just see her in this wee snapshot of time responding to the situation she finds herself in, which I think is really quite interesting. And that's what's in our epic poem, which people can go and see at the Jacobite Clans exhibition.
Cool. So Jacobite Clans is open at Perth Museum and Art Gallery until October 26th. The museum's open Tuesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. and admission is free. You can find out more information on our website, www.culturepk.org.uk.